What are people up to in town? Find out on Out There Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 5 on Valley Free Radio for live encounters from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make a scene, baby, me and you. On my rocking bicycle that's built for two. So yeah, welcome to Out There today. It's Wednesday, October 17th, and I'm alive in the studio. Today's show, I have a bunch of stories from the last week, 2 weeks, I guess. I'm not sure what all we'll have time for. I also have a recorded interview from last month when I was traveling with my friend Shira Wolberg. She went to Kentucky with me for a couple of weeks, and at the farmer's market in Knoxville, Tennessee, which is almost Kentucky, well, in my mind anyway, though it's actually 65 miles away. But anyway, at the farmer's market, there was a stand that said Loofah Land, and a man selling loofah sponges and scrubbers that we interviewed. So I think I'll play that interview with him. The other thing that I'm hoping to get to today, so on my last show 2 weeks ago, that would have been on the 3rd of October, I played an interview with Mikael, who was visiting from France with his three kids, and he and his family were building a rickshaw that they were planning on traveling with in the United States for, I don't know, a week or two. So that was the plan 2 weeks ago when we talked, and that show was on the archives. So now it's 2 weeks later. I actually traveled with them for most of a week down to Connecticut. And so I'm hoping if the timing and the technology all works out, I'm hoping to interview him by phone. He's actually in South Carolina with his family right now. But I'm hoping that he'll be able to call in later on in the show and we can see what actually happened with this rickshaw journey, pedal assist rickshaw RV journey, which, by the way, the vehicle is in my backyard at 8 High Street in Florence. If you ride down the bike path between Chestnut Street and Straw Ave and look in the backyard, you'll probably see it, and you can come check it out. So I'm going to play this. I'm not going to play the interview yet with the Loofah Land. Okay, I'm going to play the interview with the Loofah Land guy. Here we go. So I'm here at the farmer's market in Knoxville, Tennessee. The stand says Loofah Land. Can you introduce yourself?
My name's Rob Ersprung. I'm owner of Loofah Land, and I like to sell loofahs.
And is your partner here?
This is Pam, my partner. It helps me. Partner in crime helps me every second of the day.
So loofah sponges, a lot of people are in our circles. You know, we're trying to reduce the amount of trash we make and get off of petroleum products and things like that. And so I got a bunch of housemates. We're always washing dishes. We're always going through sponges and scrubbers and all of these plasticky things. So is loofah like the thing that we can be using instead?
Loofah is the best thing to use instead. It won't scratch anything. It doesn't hold bacteria, and it stays clean, and it just lasts forever.
You can use it for the body, for your dishes. What kind of things do you use it for around the house?
We use them around the house for our barbecue, our aquarium, our fish tanks, my muddy boots, just pretty much anything you need to scrub.
Tractor. And how long will they last before they fall apart?
They never fall apart. They'll get softer over time. You probably want to get one about every year or two to replace the one you had.
Can you compost them?
I don't think you can, to tell you the truth.
But they
stay like that.
They came from nature, though.
Maybe eventually.
Maybe they aerate the pile nicely.
Oh, yeah, they aerate the pile.
They could do that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They'll break down sooner than plastic, at any rate.
Probably, yes. Yeah. They are all natural, that's for sure.
Can you tell us again about how you got the idea to do it and then how it's been growing them?
How I got to do it is strange because I really didn't know what to do when I retired, and I got this farmland from a friend of mine who had let it go bad. So I cleaned it all off and planted a variety of crops, and this one just hit the mark. It was good in every way, and nobody knew about it, and I started giving them away until people said, you could sell these. So here I am.
Do you have other market or sell online or anything? Just the Knoxville Farmers Market?
Place. No, just every year we sell out. So until I can get more, then this would be the only place.
How come? Why do you think there aren't more people growing them?
They're hard to grow and they're hard to clean. And if you don't clean them at the exact right day, then they're going to be brown like this, and nobody wants to rub brown on them.
Like the inner part will be brown instead
of
beige, white.
Most people harvest them when they're dark. We harvest them when they're gold, and they come out nice and white.
Yeah.
And
so when you say clean them, you mean get the outer, the hard shell off of it.
Yes.
How do you
do it? Yeah, do you smack them against stuff or?
Beat them like crazy. It takes me 10 minutes to flog the crap out of these things.
You invite all your friends over and have a little
flogging
party.
Well, her, that's about it.
You
and her. No. I do have this Tennessee Life did a little TV show about us. If you look up my name, Rob Ersprung, on YouTube, you can see the little show and our farm, how we grow them and all about it.
Cool. Mm-hmm. They said they're also really hard to grow. Like you plant them in April, you need like a warmer climate like Thailand or Tennessee.
Yeah, we plant them indoors in April. We don't transplant them until May when the ground's good and warm. And the first frost just kills them black. Just kills them black as black. They're just black.
So how big are they before you transplant them? Like they need something to climb?
No, they don't have to be that big. But if you plant them in seeds, they just won't have enough time to go to seed. They'll just be young green shoots. That's what that last lady
had. But you can bring them outside before they need to climb?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you're saying they need a lot of water, too.
We water them every day. They're big, juicy plants with long vines. Probably 20 feet long are the vines.
Wow.
So they need a lot of water and a lot of fertilizer and a lot of sun. They have to be in full 8-hour, 10-hour sun every day.
We don't have that at home.
Out in the middle, the middle of the field, and they love 90-degree weather. We've had a lot of that this year, so that part has helped us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when do you do the harvesting, and when do you do
Right now, harvesting. We harvested some in August, but right now, this month, September, we're harvesting a lot.
Harvesting and flogging.
Yep.
Harvesting and flogging.
Yep, I'm going to get carpal tunnel before this is over. Yep.
So are these here from this year or last year?
They're last year. Okay. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And they're about like a foot and a half long.
Yeah. Yep. These big ones that we have, that's 10 inches, so they're about a foot long. The rest of them we just cut up into smaller pieces, a hand size.
And they look sort of like a giant bean, like a giant stretched out coffee bean or something. I'm
when
trying to figure out.
They do. Yeah.
Cool.
That's great.
Yeah. Thanks for being here.
Okay. Cool.
Offering this resource.
Yeah, well, maybe some other. You know, I have some nieces in Boston, and they come down and get them by the bag load when they do it. I forget what all they scrub with them, but they do something with kids. So I guess they had the kids scrubbing something. I'm not sure. Uh-huh. But they love them.
Kids clean.
Yeah. Well, it's in school, but they scrub something with them.
Great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well,
everybody seems to love them, and we have a great time here selling them. People come back. Week after week, the people before the last people, they came back 2 weeks ago, and they want to make sure we don't leave, and they can't get them anywhere else, so they got more just for the future.
Cool. How many years have you been doing it now?
It's our third year.
All right, and already in great success, it sounds like.
Well.
Life-changing.
Well, no, but it's fun for us, and look what we get to, we never would have met you all or them or the rest of them, so it's a great way to spend a Saturday, I'll say that.
Yeah.
Cool. Yep. And your product that you carry to market is light. That's very nice.
Very light, very easy. We're the envy of everybody else. We pack up and we're gone.
It's so smart.
It's a good bike delivery service. Bike hauling.
Over the years, they did crazy things in World War I. I saw where they used them in helmets for the cushions. They weave them into doormats because they're so tough. You can just scrape your feet on them and have it as a doormat. So they do have a lot of unusual uses for them.
And that was an interview with a guy from Loofah Land at the farmer's market in Knoxville, Tennessee, who I met last month. So my friend Mikhail has called in from South Carolina, who he and his family built this rickshaw rickshaw, pedicab, RV kind of situation. And so I wanted to follow up with him on how the journey went. So we're going to try and get him on the air here and make sure that this works.
Can you hear?
Mikhail, are you there? Can you hear me? Mikhail, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Aha, it worked.
I hear you.
Yeah, can you hear me okay, or should I talk louder?
But maybe you could speak not so strong, because I can't guess all your words.
Okay, I will speak...
It's a little too much strong, too much loud.
Too loud. Okay, let me turn the volumes... Let me think about which volumes I need to turn down. Okay, I think I need to turn that volume up. Is that any better? Is that better?
A little better.
A little better.
If we speak slowly, it's better.
Okay. So I should say thanks to Mark Bove for helping me figure that out right now. So this rickshaw pedicab, like how was the trip?
How was my trip with the rickshaw?
Yeah, and the family. Yeah.
So, yes, now it's... I stopped my trip five days ago. So I got time to think about it. And so we were 1 week on the road, but almost on a bike path from Northampton to south of... Springfield and Hartford. So it was a great moment for me and the children. It's a good way to discover many things. It's a good way to meet people and nature. So we have a good memory for that travel. The children too, they say, I ask them, would you like to continue? If we could continue, they say yes, we could continue. And if we do it again, maybe we like to share with people. It was great when you managed to reach us, when we could share the travel with you, and it could be maybe with much more people.
Yeah, how many people do you think you would like to travel with?
How many people? Yes. In France, sometimes we tried some travel, 2 weeks traveling or 3 weeks. We were like 25, 30 people. And it's good. It's interesting when there is different age, different person from different country. It's really interesting, so I think it could be like this, yes, like 20, 30.
Yeah, I really enjoy traveling with the children. The children are ages 8, 10, and 13, and that was a different experience for me, because most of my traveling has been with adults, like on bike trips or peace marches, that kind of thing. So that was really great. I thought, yeah. So, go ahead.
But I can say that before I went to United States, it was a long dream to travel with rickshaw. So I had this idea with United States. I don't know why. It's like a dream, but why is this dream there? I was... asking me, why is this dream? But it's like a feeling. I had to try. And just before I came here, I was thinking, oh no, it's not possible. And also some friends from France, they say, oh no, it's too difficult. It will be too much strange, too much. All is made for car and so much rules, so I think it will be not possible. So I was really wondering, is it possible or not? just before we came, I was thinking, Mom, maybe I don't do that. It's too difficult. But after we do, we managed to do, and I see that it works. I mean, also, it works with people. And three times we met the police. And in fact, two times we met the police first because some people called. I think some people think, no, it's not possible. A guy with children camping on nature like this, it should be school time. I don't know. They don't understand, maybe. They just to us a few seconds, and they worried about children. So maybe they called, so the police come. So after we had time to speak with, a long time to speak with the police, to ID,
you said, you said that one police, you were talking with them for an hour in Southwick. Yeah, so that was a long time. So sorry, go ahead.
Yes, we speak with them maybe one hour nearly, or between half or 1 hour. And after it was okay, we can continue. So I feel more more trustful.
Trusting.
Yeah. So, and also on the road, we were not only on the bike path. After we went on, because sometimes the bike path is stopped and start again after 20 or 30 miles. So we went on the road, and in fact, it was also nice on the road. We were like people from another planet coming here. But me, for me, also, it's like coming in a, on another planet when I came in USA.
So the rickshaw, for people who don't know, it's a vehicle that you lift up the front of, like a backwards wheelbarrow, and you carry, like you walk or run with. In this case, the rickshaw you built had pedal assists, so two of the children were pedaling the rear wheels. But the walker or runner, like before we left, I asked you if you had trained for it at all, and you said no. So how was it on your body to be walking or running with this vehicle with hundreds of pounds in it?
At the beginning, I think I was very enthusiastic. So, and since a long time, I think, oh, I would like to run, to travel by running. And so I ran a lot, 2 days. And the third day, it started to be more difficult for my legs. So I was more walking.
Yeah.
And after we, so it was more slowly. And, but it was interesting also because I thought my children couldn't pull the rickshaw by walking or running. But they say, we want to try, you want to try. And me, I was thinking, oh, no, it's you are too small. But they want to try. So, okay, you can try. And in fact, they walk. They walk. And then they change because they wanted to be the first one who walked before the other. And one day they do everything, walking and riding behind, and me, I had only to work with nothing, so it was good. A new experience.
Yeah.
I was happy that they could be independent for move the rickshaw.
So
and after several days, I need more to. Train. It takes time to train the body to run several miles.
Yeah.
Maybe we do like 10 or maybe sometimes 15 miles a day. I don't know really.
Yeah. Early in the trip, some people asked us, well, you know, you could just tie that to the back of a bicycle. And I said, well, this is a rickshaw project, a rickshaw dream. But then on the last day, I had my bicycle there, and so we tied it to the back of my bike. How did that compare? How did you like that compared to walking it or running it, carrying it?
Yes, I like to try different things. So for me, it was nice also to try with a bike. We saw that it was maybe faster or easier. But also one still running, so because we were two adults. So it was also good for running faster because all is going faster. Yeah. And when we went to a farm, they were horses. Horses, uh-huh. Yes. Uh-huh. And we were thinking, oh, but it could be also a horse who pulls a rickshaw. Uh-huh. And why not? So me, I'm open with different kind of way of moving. Mm-hmm. But I nearly never try with walking or running, so I was happy to try how much we can carry by walking. And maybe the rickshaw with the children, with the baggage, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's 2 kilo in pounds, I don't know, 250 kilo, I don't know.
I would guess 500 pounds or so, yeah. But it was very well balanced. So people gave you some money along the way. How did that feel when people gave you money?
Yes, it happens 3 times. People gave money. 1 time, someone gave food. Each time I was surprised because before they give money, they ask, they wanted to know the project, where we come from, what we do, why. And after they understand, they give money. So for me, it was, I was surprised. It was a good way because they asked before, they wanted to know. Because on other experience with bicycle or children, sometimes I was wondering if they give money because they think we are poor. For me, I don't want they think we sleep outside because we are poor. I want they understand it's a choice. And we like it. And me, I would like to share this sometimes. To live outside, to have a small house, we can move by hand. It could be a good life. Not only a house. Uh-huh. Inside house, yes.
Well, in France, you live in a tree house. Right.
Yes. In a treehouse, but at that time I'm moving more and more.
Yeah.
When I go back to France, I go back to the treehouse, but I lend it to a friend.
Okay.
So I just stay 1 week, and after I will move again. So I'm always moving. I feel I am like visiting this world. Sometimes I compare the world like a tree of life. If the world would be a tree, it would be like a tree of life. I'm visiting the branches of this tree.
Uh-huh.
And all the branches are really different. And some have a lot of disease, problem, different kind of problem. I feel the trunk is rotten, maybe all the tree could fall down soon. Uh-huh. But when I am in northeast of the United States, I feel it looks like a branch with green leaves. Everything is still okay.
Uh-huh.
But I think the trunk is rotten, and so I feel this on this travel. I feel the nature is green here. The house are big. Many food everywhere. Big cars. But also it could be an illusion about what happened in all the world. So, sometimes I feel we should train or we should travel to see more how it goes everywhere.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
Yeah, I have to say, for me, the trip, it was so beautiful to be along the Farmington River, or it's like swimming in the river, or
yeah,
or like sleeping out, and just to be surrounded, like you said, by so many trees and green leaves, and like it was just really beautiful. And to have this path, this network of rail trails and bike paths that we mm-hmm. could travel on, to like to be living in this beautiful place, having this beautiful experience with our bodies, like being physical, playing with all the balls that we found, the lacrosse balls, soccer balls, just playing, a lot of playing at the same time, like knowing that the trunk is rotten, the trunk is so rotten, and there's so many problems around the world. I was thinking a lot today about this radio show, the interview, and the experience, and like privilege and freedom, like how they interplay, how they connect, like who can choose to take a trip like this, it's the same world, but so many like such different parts of it. I'm thinking about where we were in Connecticut on the bike path along the river, that beauty. And then when you all took the commuter bus into Hartford, it was just like pavement, strip malls, cars, asphalt, kind of like a dead zone. Anyway, I have a bunch. Well, go ahead.
I was thinking of... At the same time as we were traveling with rickshaw at the end, at the same time, or just after, I look for news. I continue to look for news about what happened in the world.
Uh-huh.
And me, oftentimes, I look news. We have many news about disaster, uh-huh. like in South Florida. Uh-huh. South Florida. Uh-huh. The hurricane,
uh-huh.
and in France, in south of France, also some flood, so many water. They hadn't seen it since 1880, so more than 100 years ago.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So, and I think. When we live in a house in a region peaceful or looks peaceful, I don't know if it's really peaceful. Maybe I have only a superficial vision when I travel like this,
uh-huh.
but it looks peaceful, it looks stable, and why we should think maybe something would be unstable suddenly. It's always like this. I think people when we have never seen a disaster, we can't think it's possible.
Right.
And when something appears suddenly, usually we are not prepared at all for
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why also I would like to share this kind of travel. For me, it's a funny way of traveling. children, they like to travel like that. Children can like to sleep in a tent, to have a house we can move to. Because oftentimes we think, it's not possible to travel with children, or it's not possible, too dangerous. I don't feel this. I feel it's possible, and I feel it. It's a point of view. Oftentimes on the road, people told us a lot, have a safe journey. I don't know what does it mean. Have a journey with a lot of security. Or I don't know really what it means safe journey. But we don't say this in France. Have a nice journey. Maybe we say, but uh-huh. not safe journey. So does it mean the life is dangerous? Maybe you should be careful or. Maybe inconsciously it talks about the fear of yes, because many danger, many things happen in this world. So maybe it speaks about this.
Did you notice people talking about fear, like when you're in your impressions of the United States? I noticed a few times people talking about fear, saying, oh, the river is really dangerous, or what else did they say?
Yes.
Oh, the fire.
We were swimming on the river. Yes, in fact, for example, when we were swimming on the river, it was a place with a lot of current, but we can see. With uh-huh. current, we say yes. You understand?
Yeah.
Is it correct?
Okay. Yeah, current, yeah.
And so I decided to try to fix a rope, to cross the river with ropes, with children. And it was an experience, and we managed. And me, I'm happy to show to children how is it inside the current.
Uh-huh.
And with a rope, they can take the rope, and we are here, so they can... feel.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, don't go there, it's too much dangerous.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, we find a way to go inside.
Yeah.
And to see how is it inside.
Yeah.
It could be like this for many different things. Instead of staying far from it.
Yeah.
Maybe we can find a way to be inside and still be safe.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah, I was wondered if you found if it seemed like fear is an American thing, like in your trip here, does it seem like people think about fear or more than you're used to in France?
One time I was looking for water, just water.
Uh-huh.
Was water to a house. Sometimes I can. Sometimes maybe it's too strange when guy is asking water. Sometimes I couldn't ask any question. I see that they were already here. One guy is coming to our house and. So if I feel fear like this, I feel sorry for them.
Mm.
But I just, okay, I will find water somewhere else.
Yeah.
But why it's like this? Maybe we have it's the same in France. It's the same everywhere. We have so much news about criminality, about all this news spread fear everywhere. So me and maybe many friends, and I hope many people, we do not look so much, not every day, the news on TV, because we became crazy, I think.
Yeah.
We do like this.
Yeah.
But sometimes, maybe on internet, sometimes we can see that from distance. Also, when I traveled before to Africa or some like Turkey or India, I often discover that the life in countries is different than the idea we had before from this life, and different from the news. It depends what kind of news we hear. But each time when we are with people, when we meet people, in every country there are nice people. In every country, there are people who fear and who don't manage, who suffer and don't manage to feel trust to meet someone else or a stranger.
Yeah. I want to thank you for your time for this interview, and also thank you for coming to visit and building this amazing thing. Thanks to the children, to Tsunamo and Oyuni and Swan. Tell them thank you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thanks to you, to many people in Northampton and people on the way.
Yeah, and I hope you have a nice trip back to France.
Yes.
And you're welcome back in the United States anytime. Yeah, anything else you want to add?
Yes, I think we'll come back. I don't know when.
Mm-hmm.
I follow the wind. I follow the sun or the rain.
Yeah, the weather patterns are really unpredictable, so who knows? All right. Well, I'm going to hang you up and carry on with the show.
Okay.
I'm saying goodbye.
Goodbye. Yes. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you. So that was Mikael talking about the rickshaw adventure. I'm going to play a little song while I recombobulate myself. This is some Talking Heads. Whoa, that was a little bit loud. Sorry, that was very loud. Some Talking Heads. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Thanks for tuning in today. I've got a couple of announcements. Let's see. Here's five myths about voting that I found in the Teaching Tolerance magazine. Number one, the U.S. Constitution guarantees all U.S. citizens the right to vote. Well, actually, amendments to the Constitution tell states what they can't do, like they can't deny the vote based on race, gender, or age, for example. But nothing in the Constitution tells states that they must ensure all citizens can vote. Like, for example, people who are locked up or convicted of felonies. Just one little example. I read something recently about lots of voters purged from the rolls in Georgia. Anyway, what else? Myth. Presidential elections are the ones that really matter. Well, really, where does your water come from, and how are local police officers trained? State and local elections decide who answers these questions and more. Another myth, that voter ID fraud is a big problem in the United States. However, according to the Brennan Center for Justice, Americans are more likely to be struck and killed by lightning than to impersonate another voter. Myth that college students have to vote where their parents live. Well, actually, most college students can vote at home or where they go to school. Every state's different, so check the law and register well in advance of election day in the state where you plan to vote. And the fifth one on this sheet, my vote doesn't count. But actually, because tied elections are surprisingly common, every vote matters. In 2017, in Virginia, officials drew a name from a bowl to decide control of the state's House of Delegates. All right, so you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. I had some stories from the week. Which ones to start with? I don't know. Well, what's today? I'll start with yesterday because that was the most recent in my memory. No, okay, I'll start with Monday. So Monday morning, I was doing downtown trash. I was emptying the trash barrels on Main Street in downtown Northampton, something that I do as part of Pedal People, that we have a contract with the city to empty those. And so it was 8 o'clock in the morning, and I was starting down Main Street, and it was a drizzly morning. I think it may have been cold, too. Anyway, it was wet, and I'm emptying the barrels, but the noise on Main Street, filling all of Main Street, there's these two leaf blowers going across the street in front of Urban Outfitters. But the noise is like, I should have recorded it so I could drive some people nuts. Anyway, it was really driving me nuts, but I kept on going. They were just running at max power, these leaf blowers. And so I kept on emptying barrels going down the street. And then I was feeling, I don't know, I was hormonal, I was crabby, it was just too much. And so I just started yelling into the trash barrels, and I was emptying them, "Shut up! Shut up!" And then just like rattling the trash barrels. I don't normally lose my temper, but this, I felt that way. I felt like it was really making me go out of control. And I was like, it's like, who, like, if I was yelling at that volume, someone would call the cops. So why are these machines allowed to make this incessant noise? Why are they allowed to do that? I don't know. Anyway, then I just like stopped where I was, and I marched across Main Street in the middle of the street over to where one of the guys had the leaf blower. And when he saw me coming down the sidewalk, he stopped blowing so I could walk through. And I was just kind of waving my arms around. I didn't know what I was going to say. I just had it. I just had it. So I kind of waved my arms around like I wanted to talk to him. And so he pulled out one of his earplugs. And I was just like, this is insane. And he was like, well, what? And I was like, can't you like turn the volume down on your leaf blower or something? I think first I said, can you like use a rake? And he said, well, nope, it's wet out. Or no, he just said, nope, can't do that. Can you turn the volume down or the power down on the leaf blowers? Nope, it's wet. And I was So they were blowing honey locust leaves in the rain. And I said, well, can you wait till a dry day? And he was like, nope, nothing, can't do anything about it. And I just turned and walked away. Fortunately, they were almost done. So by the time I got across the street and emptied one more barrel, they had left. But I know some cities have passed city ordinances about, well, there's city ordinances about maximum noise allowed, decibels allowed. There's also, I know that some cities have passed ordinances saying, like, at least city employees can't use gas-powered leaf blowers. Anyway, it's a public health issue. We got to address it. I'll put that on my list. What else? So then the next day, I was doing downtown trash. And I'm emptying, I'm coming up Main Street in front of Haymarket, emptying the barrels. And I get close to Haymarket, and the smell of diesel exhaust, it's just like permeating. And as I go down the street emptying the barrels, I get closer and closer to this big, big pickup truck that's just sitting in a parking spot idling in front of Synergy. And so I was emptying the trash barrel like right in front of it. And I walked over to the driver's side window and stood there for a minute. And the guy rolled down the window partway. And I said, hi, I don't know if you realize, but the exhaust from your truck is making it hard to breathe all the way down the block. And he just kind of looked at me. And I was like, I don't know if you can, like, make your engine run more cleanly or something. Or turn it off. And he looked at me kind of, and he said, I'll be leaving shortly. And he rolled the window back up. And anyway, then I gasped for breath and went about my way down the street. That was yesterday. Oh, and then today, when I came down the same block emptying the barrels, the truck was there parked in the same spot, but it wasn't idling. There was no one in it. And when I had said the thing to him the day before, actually after he had rolled up the window, I sort of muttered, and besides, it's against city ordinance or state law, I'm not sure which, to idle for more than 2 minutes. But I didn't want to argue the legal thing. I just wanted to argue the practical thing, which is that it's hurting people, it's hurting me. Anyway, so today I saw the truck. And no one was there. And I took a glance at the license plate when I rode by. And the first three letters were B9Z. And I thought, B9? 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 I don't think so. And then later I saw the truck drive away. And it went down the street by the police station. And I thought, see, that's why I prefer the moral argument to the legal argument. Because, like, you know, what if the guy already controls the law? I don't know if I want to, I don't know. The law already exists. And all right, I'm not going to babble down that path anymore. Also coming up this Saturday and every Saturday.
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Vengan al Bike Lab de Northampton, el taller de bicicleta. Aprende a arreglar tu bicicleta y a divertirte.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
We'll be right back. with a beautiful wife. And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
Letting the days go by. Let the water hold me down. Letting the days go by. Water flowing underground into the blue again. After the money's gone, once in a lifetime. Water flowing underground.
And you may ask yourself, how do I work this? And you may ask yourself, where is that large automobile? And you may tell yourself, this is not my beautiful house. And you may tell yourself, this is not my beautiful wife.
Letting the days go by. Let the water hold me down. Letting the days go by. Water flowing underground into the blue again. After the money's gone, once in a lifetime. Water flowing underground.
Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was.
So thanks for listening to Out There Today. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Democracy Now! Is up at 5 o'clock. You can listen to archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. I had some other things that happened to me this week. Well, happened to me. Other stories. There are like three encounters I had this week when I was out working with people who were very drunk. In two cases, lying down, one man lying in the middle of the path with a crashed bike between his legs, another incident with the man lying under a tree in the grass in the cold rain. So, yeah, I just want to encourage us to look out for each other. And, especially with the weather getting cold. And, yes, look out for one another. Try and make good choices in your life when you can. All right, see you out there.
Same as it ever was.